You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. And find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of How to Hunt Deer. I'm Dan Johnson, and our other host, Jason Thibodeau. Jason, how we doing, dude?
I'm doing pretty good today.
Yeah.
Weather was crazy this weekend, though. So we made it out to Iowa to do a little shed hunting Friday, Saturday, and Friday, man, I think it was like mid-70s, and we were sweating. And then yesterday, I actually had to help one of my uncles move and up by Rockford, and he got like 4.5 inches of snow. And
in Rockford, Illinois?
Yeah. Yep. And wow. So they had like a four and a half inches of snow there just east of them. They got another inch and a half on top of that. And then me, I'm almost an hour west of them, and I got a dusting maybe at most. But it was just cold. And so I didn't really enjoy the weather yesterday. But Friday and Saturday were pretty decent. Saturday, we basically just, you know, wiggled our way back home. We stopped at a few different places, Cabela's and up at Prairie du Chien, and we were up in the Driftless area up there. Okay. It's pretty cool up there. I like going up there. I try to go up there, you know, once a year now. And so her and I went, and we did a wine tasting, place I'd never been to, and then we stopped at a couple breweries on the way back, and happened to stop at a place in McGregor called
McGregor, Iowa.
Yeah. And so Old Man River was the place we stopped at, and they said they have the number one beer in the state of Illinois, according to the Illinois State Fair. So I thought that was kind of cool. I don't do too much of that, but every once in a while her and I, you know, we'll do a wine tasting or something somewhere. So
yeah. My wife really is into like wine tasting and all that foo-foo stuff. I don't mind it. I like going to little pubs or like breweries and doing flights and tasting all their beers. But I'm getting to the point in my life where I know what I like and I don't want to try anything new. Like maybe I'm stubborn, but dude, Northeast Iowa, Southeast Minnesota, Southwest Wisconsin. If there's a place that I feel would be as close to heaven as I've ever been, that's where I want to go. And for eternity, man, the Mississippi River and all the bluffs, the Driftless areas, man, absolutely gorgeous up there. I love it.
Yeah, we sat along the river there Saturday morning, and it was raining, but we were able to enjoy watching the bald eagles and stuff. And, man, that's one of my favorite animals to watch. They're just amazing. So we had a good time. This is her second year going up there with me, and She got her workout in on Friday. You know, just, you know how it is. I mean, it is steep terrain in some of those spots.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this kind of leads us to the topic of conversation a little bit today. And you came to Iowa for a scouting/shed hunting mission?
Yeah, so I've kind of been dissecting Iowa for the last 6 years, basically, and I've already drawn an Iowa tag once and was unsuccessful, and it was up in that northeast corner. But I will say I've been everywhere from southeast Iowa, central Iowa, over by Maquoketa and stuff, and then I've been up into that corner. And really, I think that the ground, I mean, it holds the deer. You see the sign, you see everything. So I don't think it's necessarily one of those things like there's a better area, so to speak. But I will also say this: there's not a booner around every corner. There's great sign everywhere in that state. But the one thing that really got me, so we went to a piece that I had hunted a couple years back, and we were in there hiking, and we jumped some deer and stuff, and she was just amazed at the amount of trash that is on public
Oh,
ground.
trash.
Yeah, garbage, just garbage. And so we'd be, I don't know, we got about a mile and a half back in there, and she's like, well, how far is that? And I told her, and she's like, how is there just a water bottle? And I said, I don't know. I mean, because to me, if you carry it out there with you, is it that difficult to carry it back? You either have a backpack or a pocket or whatever. But then the amount of tree stands that get left on public ground, just ground blind stools sitting in the middle of nowhere, like overlooking a bank or something. To me, there was the second place we went to, there was a tent, like somebody had camped in it at some point, and it was up on this ridge and everything, and a tree had fallen on it. It's just real disrespectful, I think, that people can leave it that way.
And you should see some of the boat landings around where I like the boat landings and the parking lots for public ground around where I live. I can't understand why people are so slobbish. It blows my mind. Like, instead of paying $7 to take your trash to the dump and driving an extra mile, they'll just pull up into a hunting parking lot on the public ground and empty. Like, to the one point, like, it pissed me off. I was in a bad mood, and a guy had a Hy-Vee bag, okay, Hy-Vee grocery store, and he ended up eating his lunch and throwing his trash right outside. And so I don't know why I felt like investigating that day, but I pulled the receipt out. I knew it was bought the day before, and the person is a Hy-Vee employee,
Oh my
right?
goodness.
And so, because there was an employee discount on that receipt, and so I'm like, okay, I know where this was purchased. I know, like, I don't know. I felt like almost doing some investigating and be just like trying to find the guy who did it and just be like, hey, dude, and then throw the trash right back in their face. I mean, a couple of years ago, I went on like a, and if I see something big, I'll just throw it in the back of my truck and take it back with me and throw it in the trash or find a dumpster. And sometimes I'll even go to the DNR station and throw it all in the trash there. But man, a while ago, me and my kids, we went on a trash pickup day, and I loaded my truck two times with bed, like box springs, old tires, just bags and bags of trash. The thing that pissed me off the most was fireworks. They'll
Oh,
go
really?
out, they'll blow up the fireworks, and they'll just leave all the trash there. They won't go pick it up. And so, I don't know. It frustrates me a lot because that's more than just theirs. It's for everybody to use. And the way that budgets work with the state of Iowa, and I'm sure all states, they don't have a person dedicated to go cleaning that shit up, right? It's all either volunteer work or it just sits there sometimes. So I don't know. I get really frustrated when I see people litter. And that's something that's always been like, my dad was always that guy who's like, dude, like, you can't litter. Don't litter. Don't do that. Pick that up. Hey, you go pick that up. I know you didn't do it, but go pick it up, throw it in the trash. Like, he instilled that into me at a really, really early age.
Oh, I think it's just decency is what it is. You know, I mean, but the kids and I, we'll go up and down the ditches in the spring here, and we'll take garbage bags and we'll go pick up the stuff. And, you know, to the point of like being out in Iowa, generally, if I had my truck with me or something, I have contractor bags in the trucks and everything all the time, but we had her car. And so I didn't have any, you know, and I really felt bad leaving there, not have taken one with me and picked stuff up. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really disrespectful. You know, the thing that I've noticed too is a lot of people that do that stuff, they're the first ones that complain when rules and regulations change on certain things, you know. And if somebody stiffens down and tightens down on what they can do on public ground or what they can't do, you know, and then we lose privileges because of stupid stuff like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. I got some questions here about this little scouting mission. And I think that's what we should focus on today, is maybe scouting new pieces of property. So you've hunted Iowa twice, northeast Iowa to be specific, which is a completely different terrain set than everything you see on the big hunting shows. Okay. Right. All of the hunting shows are farm ground, fingers, manicured, like there's not a ton of terrain unless you're maybe near a river bottom. Most of these big, I guess I'm going to call them a showcase farm, they're farm ground, okay, with some timbered fingers and things like that. Now, northeast Iowa, where you're at, is steep. I mean, which is, in my opinion, is smart for you, because just based off of the terrain alone, people are not going to go into that area unless they are in really good shape. Okay. So why did you decide that northeast Iowa and that specific terrain set is the best place for you?
Honestly, I mean, so like I said, when I started dissecting Iowa, the very first place I went years ago was northeast Iowa. It was closer towards like Harper's Ferry in that region. And then we went down southeast Iowa. And so you know, the terrain changes, like you say, you know, you get into the river bottoms, you might have a little bit of that, little bit of elevation change, but not much. And then you get into like central Iowa, where I took a trip out towards Maquoketa, and there is some terrain change, but most of it's just ag ground. Well, for me at home here, my elevation change is 30 foot, 20 foot. Yeah. You know, there's not a whole lot. Unless I go to the very northwest corner, Illinois, there's not going to be much. So I thought it was kind of cool, especially if you want to prepare yourself for a future western hunt. You know, you can get your workouts in by doing that. And I think one of the biggest things that a lot of guys, when they go on a western hunt, that they forget about is actually packing stuff and putting a backpack on and training that way too. So when we went, that was one of the first things she asked me this year was, how do you shoot a deer and get a deer out of here? You know, what do you do? And I said, well, I mean, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pinpoint all the parking lots, and I'm gonna scout that out and see who's in what areas those times when I'm there to hunt. And then I'm gonna have enough intel on these pre-scouting missions that I can, you know, jump from A to B to C and so on and so forth. But for me, it's the isolation of it. You know, when you walk back one of those tall fingers and then you start to creep over the ledge or something, and then you can see this big open area down below you, and you know that if you shoot something, you got your work cut out in for you. Yeah. I mean, because you got to decide how you're getting it out. You know, are you going to try to drag that thing out? Are you taking it to the bottom so it's a little easier drag along the bottom? Are you going to drag it straight to the top? Or, you know, are you quartering it? Are you allowed to take a game cart or, say, a sled like we've talked in the past? Any of those options, you know, you got to figure that stuff out. But for me, it was just simply the isolation of it and knowing that there's big bucks in those areas. I had a guy about 15 years ago. He lived over by the Mississippi River in western Illinois. And he swore to me that some of the biggest bucks he'd ever seen and ever, he was a taxidermist, and ever mounted came from those islands on the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. So when you put it all together, once you realize, you know, some of the ground that you can actually hunt, I think it's, you know, it's a heck of a scouting mission, but you can never cover all the ground.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Number one, you got to stop saying towns, dude, or there's going to be like, there's dudes out there that are, oh, you spot burner. You're a spot burner, whatever the case is. But hey, I'll tell you this right now. That don't mean shit, because Iowa has such limited
like such limited public land that you're gonna be in those places anyway.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of how hard you want to work to get to that. Like if you're fat and you can't walk, like I would suggest not going to Northeast Iowa. If you're out of shape, like this is no joke. If you do shoot a deer out of there, it's going to take you hours and hours to get out to, you know, some of these places to get a deer out of there. I mean, and Iowa has a law that says you cannot quarter the deer in the timber. You have to take it out whole.
Right.
So good luck on that, man. I don't know how you're going to do it. You may have to call me and I'll have to come help you out.
Well, and that's just it too. If you're hunting solo on that stuff, I mean, not only do you have to be in shape, but I mean, you better hope that you have a friend that's either close by or willing and able to come out if that happens on the spur of the moment. You know, so last year or the year before? I think it was the year before. I went out shed hunting, similar area and stuff, and I ran into a guy. I think he was from Michigan, if I'm not mistaken.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit ThompsonCigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies, and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back. Literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco for the hardworking American.
And he says he would take these week-long trips out there to shed hunt and everything. And I thought I was in great shape and everything. And I'm looking at this guy, and this guy's, you know, string bean, and he's spent an entire week out there hoofing up and down these things. I said, how many sheds you find? Oh, a dozen or, you know, a couple handfuls or whatever. Yep. He's like, what do you got? Oh, I found a spike over here. He says, how long are you staying? Today and tomorrow. And he just laughed, you know, like he knew, you know, well, you're not in shape yet. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So a completely different environment. Like, how are you preparing for, not physically, but how are you preparing from a scouting standpoint? Like when you step on this piece of public or this new property and it is completely different than what you're used to, what steps are you taking and what are you looking for in order to find the best spots to hang a tree stand in a completely new environment?
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Well, I could tell you off of the first piece that we walked, there was two or three stands left in place still that the DNR hasn't snagged and people haven't taken down. So I'm kind of going to cross those off my list because they're a permanent stand that somebody's keeping up. They're hunting that area pretty religiously. The very last spot I went to, seeing all that trash just kind of led me to think there's tons of people. This is a dump, you know, so checking those spots off my list. Yes, they look like good sign in areas, you know, but just knowing that, and then with the past that I've been out there too, you know, knowing which parking lots fill up and which ones don't, it was just isolation. Get, you know, to me, I'm going to walk a little bit further, and maybe it's not a little bit further that you need to be. Maybe it's thicker or maybe it's steeper, you know, so that's kind of what I've been, you know, just taking pieces out of. You know, one spot had a water source that ran through the entire piece of it. Another spot looked like it had water, but only if it rained, you know, so there was things like that that I was really looking for. The numbers look good in all of them. There was a couple areas where I found some hub scrapes that were being used. There was tons of doe bedding areas that I was seeing, a few buck bed areas. And then there was those little pockets of just buck rubs everywhere. Like you could definitely tell it was a buck bed. So just, you know, like I say, putting all the pieces together and then making a list of like, well, I'm going to start here. And if this doesn't work, I'm just going to go to the next spot, and so on and so forth. But my goal isn't, you know, because I think right now I sit only with 2 points, you know, so I think what it's taken non-residents right now in like Southeast is like 5 or 6 to draw down there. I don't really have to go down there. This is a lot closer for me. I can get to this in about 3 hours, so I could potentially hunt it a couple times during the season. So yeah. I just want to scout a little bit more, a few more pieces, and then probably at 3 or 4 points draw. Don't try to draw on this.
Gotcha. Okay. So as opposed, or from a terrain standpoint, as you were walking up and down these ridges and hills, and did you start to see any type of consistency? Like at the end of every ridge, you found a bed, or at the top of there, you know, close to an ag field or whatever, you found thickness where that could be a bedding area. Like, did you start to see repetitiveness?
Well, yeah, and then I think once you start to scout a lot of that terrain, you can notice that a lot of deer like those points. They will bet on those points because they can bail off the sides if there's a predator or human after them. So I started looking at that, but then what I was putting together is off all those points, you know, like there's that military crest, there's that little billy goat trail that runs, you know, parallel with the ridge, but it's down just far enough that they're safe, they're out of sight, and they can move right through it. And just as luck would have it, we walked to one of the furthest points the first day. And when we got back there, there was a herd of like 6 does came just barreling in. And I mean, they stopped at about 20 yards. They didn't even know we were there. And they just milled around. And, you know, when we started looking in there, those deer were actually just coming off of another point, and they had dumped down on a side and came up to where they were going to bed. Because if you look in the area where we were at, there was just loaded with beds everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. So yes to consistency then?
Yeah, I definitely say, you know, if you're into making that hike, get to the furthest point, that's where the deer are going to be. But now you're going to have to figure out which direction that point is according to the wind. And then what's that wind doing when it dumps off those sides? You know, is it going to swirl back up or?
Yeah. So did you run into any scenarios? Because a lot of public land is, okay, there's a road. That's your access point. And then it's a big block of public land. But a lot of times in order to get to an area and in that part of the state, I guess that terrain's a little bit different, but did you ever, were you looking for what the public is surrounded by as far as like ag fields or, you know, like maybe you could get another access route and backdoor this or what concerned you? What were, you know, let me ask this a different way. Was there anything on private that led you to some of these spots because the deer were going to take advantage of both private and public?
So not so much on the first piece. The first piece was basically, you know, you could pull up to a parking spot and there was multiple ones depending on where you're at. And there was a manicured mowed trail that the state does. And then they plant their food plots and so on and so forth. But the second one I went to, there was kind of the same scenario. You had a mowed trail, it's kind of along a creek bottom. And then if you got off of that, which we did, and we walked up to the point, and she was hating me for it. But once we got up to the flat part, that was where the deer were. That was like the money situation. So if we could get in there, it was great. But on the north side of it was an alfalfa field, and that was private. And just looking at the way that that laid, it, I mean, to me, it was going to hunt great. But then I also started thinking, this is easy for those residents who hunt that to actually backdoor the public, you know, so they could hunt the fringes of the public ground, waiting for the public pressure to come in, and boom, there the deer get spooked out, and then they're on the private piece. So there's, you know, there's a take on each one of those, but I did like the second scenario better. It was just getting in was going to be rough on that one versus the first one. It was an easy walk. And then like, once you got into the woods, it was like almost the woods was, I don't want to say managed or logged at some point, but it was definitely no, hardly any underbrush. The underbrush on that was actually on private, you know, so you could see that was an advantage there. Like the deer were probably going to, you know, bed over on that side, and they may feed out onto the public where all these acorn flats and stuff were, but it's hard to say if I would choose A over B. I liked the look of B better because it had water source also.
Yeah. Okay. And so as you got into, you know, comparing these pieces of property of where you might spend some of your time, are you, how are you deciding which is best? I mean, are you going all in for, let's say, one of the properties and then forgetting about the other property? Or are you kind of making a spot list that is like, okay, this spot is going to be my number one spot, this spot is going to be my number two spot if number one sucks, and then go down the line?
Yeah, so that's basically what I did the first time I hunted out there, was I made a checklist of like 1 through 5, I think it was. And when I first went to hunt that first evening, I got to the first spot and, you know, there was 5 trucks parked there. So it was kind of like I just went down the list from there. And then I basically got as far away from the people then as I could, just so that way I know it wasn't necessarily them that were spooking deer or whatever. It was me. You know, I was the intrusion then.
Right. Okay. All right. And how were you documenting all of this?
I take notes, I write it down, and then I keep a lot of stuff on my Onyx maps.
Onyx, you
know,
yep.
Okay. Yep, yep. So, I mean, like, if I find a shed, you know, that gets marked. If I see, like, a hub scrape, that gets marked. If I see an area of a bunch of buck rubs, that'll get marked. So, I mean, literally, a lot of these public places that I go to, it literally looks like a pincushion.
Okay. So, as and so that's how you're documenting, that's how you're making notes, like... And then a little bit of memory, a little bit of down on paper about wind direction and what you think, like, hey, I got spot A or B or C here. I need this wind and this, you know, in order to access it and hunt it. Uh-huh. And so did you run into any like little areas where you're just blown away by the sign and then see like a tree stand or something there where you're like, oh, dude.
Yep. And so that's kind of how it happened when I had first hunted out there. The spot that I ended up in wasn't even on my checklist. And so then I basically was scouting and hunting at the same time on this trip, but I literally wanted to get away from all these other hunters at the time.
Yeah.
And so when I walked in, I counted probably 3 tree stands in this area, but nobody was hunting there. So I thought, well, at least I'll try it, you know, but the sign was amazing. There was scrapes, there was rubs, there was beds, there was deer. I saw the biggest buck I saw on that trip was coming out of one of those bottoms right below 3 tree stands, you know? So I knew that it got pressured and it got hunted, but nobody was there when I was. So that's what I did then. And it's kind of the same thing now. You know, if I'm walking around and I see these tree stands, well, you know, it gets hunted.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Are you going to let a tree stand influence a good spot?
I mean, you could put weight in that and you could say, well, there's a tree stand here, so somebody knows it's good, right? You could put weight in it and say, well, it's getting pressured by someone else. You know, for an example, years ago, it's probably been 20 years almost now, I hunted a piece in central Illinois, and I had no information on it. Basically, it was I was renting it for a week. And when I got there, I just started walking around trying to scout as I'm hunting. And I found this old, it was like steel rod ladder just sitting up in a tree, and it wasn't even 10 foot off the ground. And I kept notes of it. And then towards the end of the trip, that's where I ended up shooting a 10 point on my very last night, you know. It's like I used that information to my advantage also, you know, that, hey, there was a guy that was hunting here probably 30 years ago. This is a good spot for some reason. And sure enough, it was, you know. But now if it's current, like I'm out there shed hunting and there's still a tree stand sitting up, well, for one, it tells me a couple things: that the DNR hasn't started to confiscate tree stands yet, that none of them were labeled that I saw. And I thought that's something that the states do, because I know here in Illinois, they'll confiscate tree stands if they're not taken down within a certain period, and then they'll auction all that stuff off in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
Is that what Iowa does?
Yeah, Iowa, I believe it's a 30-30 rule. So like you can put your, maybe it's different in the beginning. I think you can, it's either 7 days or 30 days. I know they changed it recently, but I don't know, days before. But after the season's over, you have 30 days to take your tree stands off. However, the thing is, I don't know if we necessarily have the staff to enforce it. There's not a guy walking around all the public land in Iowa going, all right, I'm going to take this down. I'm going to haul it back to my truck. I'm going to take it down. I'm going to haul it back to my truck. Right. Like, I just don't see that happening.
Right.
So I don't know. However, I want to talk from a strategy standpoint here a second. I would not be discouraged if I saw a tree stand, and here's why. One, schedule. When do most guys come out and hunt? The first week of November, right? Everybody focuses on the first week of November. For some reason, people think November 1 is the kickoff to the best hunting in the world. And, you know, there's a little bit of truth to that. However, if I saw that and I was walking through the timber, I go, okay, that tree stand's there for a reason. Somebody saw something at some point. Yeah. I would focus the week before that and then the week after that. Because I don't know about you, but November 1st through the 7th, I'm driving down all these roads in my state and I'm seeing trucks and trucks. But that second week, I'm not seeing as many trucks out and about, because guys are using all of their vacation, roughly about a week. This is all hypothetical, by the way.
Yeah.
That first week, and then after that, it's wide open, right? Well, less every single day, there's less people in the woods.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, I mean, even go back to what you said the week before November 1st. I mean, if you go October 24th to Halloween, I mean, that's a great week to catch these deer in that pre-rut phase. And I mean, that's when bucks have broke up. That's when they're cruising kind of alone. And, you know, if you go that week after, you know, say around the 8th through the 15th, 16th, somewhere in there, that's when they're coming off those first does and stuff. So to me, they're missing out, you know. Yeah. And I've seen it myself. You drive around those country roads, there's guys that took their 1 week of vacation, and that's when they're hunting.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so don't be discouraged by finding a tree stand, right?
No.
Cause it's a little bit of an indicator. Now, the other thing I want to talk to you is there's this notion that you got to go deep into public. You got to go deep. Then there's other guys who have found success hunting close to trailheads and trying to be smarter than everybody else. Because there's also this idea that if you go further, you're just pushing deer all over the place, okay?
Yeah.
And deer are smart. They'll sit close. They'll watch people come into the, you know, they'll come into the thing, and then they'll bed closer to the trailhead or the parking area.
Right.
Did you find any spots that were closer to the road or closer to parking lots, and you had an idea that maybe this might be a good spot?
Absolutely. So we did. So when we did our first hike, we hiked all the way back to this point. And like I said, we had already watched these does come at us. So we had walked past them at one point. So then when on our wet walk back, we kind of took a different route. And she says, let's go down in the bottom and it'd be easier walking. Well, if you walk any of those bottoms, and they're overflow bottoms, it's all just full of rocks and leaves that are 3 foot deep and everything. So I don't think she made the best choice. But what it did is it led us to a field up at the top. And so once we got to the field at the top, there was a terrace that kind of wrapped around the other side of it. And then on that side of it, I started looking at all the thick brush and everything. And my thought was, I can slip in here from the outside of the road pretty easy. And I can sit on the inside of this terrace and I can face this drainage that comes up to this field. And I can also see this field that kind of comes parallel to the backside of me without using a tree stand. You know, and it's just how you tuck yourself in and what you're wearing. I mean, it could have been a stool sit. It could have been, you know, sit on the ground, period. So, yeah, it did. It led me to a couple different things because there was no trees that you could really hang in that area.
Mm-hmm. Just because they were too small or too big?
Both. Okay. Both. So there was some.
So we're talking big open timber with big mature trees in it.
So off to the, it'd be off to the east. It was big open timber, like oak flat. And then as you come to the west, it was like a bottom that pinched down and it was a drainage. Well, in that drainage, just very, very slightly off to the west of it going north was all thick, like little sapling trees. And it was just loaded with rubs and scrapes throughout there. But if I sat 30 to 40 yards south of that point, and if the wind cut, you know, from like the northwest, I think this would be just a dynamite spot.
Yeah. Okay. All right. What, anything else that you looked for, like terrain crossings, right? And so in bigger country like that, where you're coming off a steepness, sometimes they'll come down a ridge. There's those, like drainage points, and then they go up. Did you find any transition areas like that that might be good?
Yeah. So in kind of, if this hits off of what you're saying, so where a point would come to the east and then there'd be another point that kind of came to the south, where that point kind of converged there, that was like a drainage, but it was a subtle drainage. It wasn't like a steep drop off or anything. Well, those deer would come off of those points and they would drop down just to that military crest and they could either walk north or they could walk west, which would create an intersection. So depending on your wind, you could actually sit off of that point, but not be on either one of those other points, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What else? What else did you find? What else are you looking for specifically? And I doesn't, maybe it doesn't even have to be a terrain specific thing. What I'm trying to get by this question is just helping people who are trying to scout new pieces of property.
Yeah. So a lot of the ground that I have scouted in Iowa, period, they do an excellent job from what I can tell of planning food plots and leaving food for deer throughout the seasons. And so if you can keep track of it from year in and year out, you'll also understand that they do crop rotation as well. And that there are farmers that harvest the corn and stuff like that throughout. Then there are some spots that, like on when the second piece that we went to, there was a big bottom area that was supposed to be a food plot. But this bottom area, for some reason, is just absolutely saturated and it's just full of weeds now. So I don't know how many years that this food plot hasn't been put in. And it's been dry here. So my assumption that is it's been pretty dry there as well. But this is not a food source. So, you know, if you're looking at food plots and food sources on those pieces, then you're going to have to start looking a little bit harder. Like, where are my oak trees? Is there apples around? You know, is there soft mass for them to eat on too?
I don't know if it's hunt stand or Onyx. But some of the places where we hunted in Nebraska would show where food plots are or where certain food sources were.
Yep.
And so did that show up on some of those maps as well?
Yeah. So what Onyx does is a really good job is they get very, very close to where they have seen, you know, crop ground. And what the crop layer does, it gives you the intel from the previous year. So, you know, if last year in 2024 was beans and you've seen a crop rotation, you can anticipate in 2025 that you're going to have corn. So that does play a good factor into, you know, when you're scouting these pieces. If you find a water source and if you look and you see, man, there looks like there's good bedding here, I just need a food source, and then you pull up that on your map. I mean, to me, and this is for everybody. I mean, I'm not going to plug any one of these mapping softwares because they're all great. They all do something amazing that we never had when we first started. But for the $100 a year, it is worth its weight in gold because it saves you so much.
Yeah. From a scouting standpoint.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
And well, I think my favorite part about digital maps like that is just the documentation. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the ability to put something down. You don't have to index it in your brain. And then whenever you go back to those locations, like I didn't hunt Nebraska last year or the year before, but if I ever go hunt Nebraska again, guess what? I got a starting point.
Right.
So,
right. Well, and that's so, what yeah. That's what she asked me too when we were out hiking and stuff. I pull up the map and I say, well, we're here, you know, property boundaries that way. You know, we kind of use it that way. But then she's like, all these lines. And I'm just like, yep, the tighter they are, you know, the steeper it is. And she's like, how did you learn how to read that? I said, honestly, looking at old paper maps first. But I said, now with this, you know, Onyx, you can put it in 3D mode, or Google Earth, you could put it in 3D mode, and then you can actually flip it and see this is exactly how steep that is. There is a drop off here, you know. So it is, I think to me, it's probably one of my best hunting purchases every year.
Yeah, you're right. It is, especially for people who are, I don't know, non-resident hunters. Like
non-resident.
Yeah.
Non-resident and not having time to maybe scout out of state, you know, or even within state, you know, you could sit there and I don't know how many times I look at the pieces I hunt here around home, and I start looking at it and I turn it and I spin it and I zoom out, you know, and I start looking at neighboring properties. And then I start looking at which way is the wind coming out of today, you know, and I put it all together, man, you can really use that to your advantage in a big way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to think of another thing to be mindful for. And that, I don't know. Here's just an assumption. You can go scout a good piece of property, and it's going to be for example, I live in an area that has a decent amount of public land for the area, right? Not for the entire state, but for the area. And it is between two of the biggest cities in Iowa. And so like top 10 biggest cities in Iowa. And so I go out there and do my spring scouting. Maybe even turkey hunting is not near as busy. You know, there's a whole bunch of different things that, you know, could like play a role into that. And, but then when it comes to deer hunting, people start to show up. Right. Yeah. So if just because, so two things, number one, a piece gets overlooked because everybody assumes that it's too close to town, uh-huh, or everybody hunts it because it's so close to town. Right. And so that's something that I'm sure is hit and miss. One thing that I would recommend on any type of non-resident hunt, or going, not even non-resident, it would be on a piece of public or on even a property that you share with someone, try your hardest to get out there during the week.
Yeah.
And that is like, if you can hunt places during the week, the weekends are obviously uh-huh, going to have more traffic. But if you can get there during the weekdays, I think you're going to have a better shot at having pieces of property to yourself, minus the rut time frame where everybody's out in the woods taking their vacation anyway.
Yeah, I 100% agree. The one thing I'll add to that is, you know, obviously if Saturday and Sunday are the busiest 2 days, the next two busy days are Friday and Monday, you know, because exactly, guys will take one day and they'll have a 3 day weekend or a 4 day weekend, you know. So mm-hmm, if you're going to hunt, to me, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday has always been the best, because if it's pressured all weekend long, you give those deer 1 or 2 days to cool off, and then you're hunting them by, say, Wednesday morning, those deer are a little bit more relaxed than what they were, say, Monday morning.
100%. I'm trying to think if there's anything else we need to talk about, in regards to, you know, walk all the properties. Don't just walk it to walk it. Obviously shed hunting brings an extra little thing. You're looking for sheds, but I even feel that sometimes when you're shed hunting, I know I do it, especially on a new property, I can get distracted by looking for sheds, and you're not necessarily looking for the best terrain feature. So I would say when you are out on any new piece of property, slow down, stop, be observant. I would even watch wind and what the wind does. Like if you're there and you find a spot, you're like, oh, this would be great for a north wind. And it is a north wind. Sit on that ridge and watch what the wind does. Does it pool in the bottom? Does it cycle in the bottom? Where does it kick out at? Maybe even bring some milkweed or synthetic little cotton strands with you and let them go and kind of see what it does. Yep. Slow everything down. Keep your eyes open. And I think that's going to tell you more than just going and trying to check boxes and hop into the next ridge and go, okay, no bedding here, no rubs here, next, because deer are going to show up. I'm talking a lot here. One of the best deer hunting spots I have ever found. And I never even really got a chance to hunt it. I put a cell cam on this ridge, one trail, but it was thick. So it had really good cover and there was no, it was thick, no sign on it, no buck rubs, no scrapes. In the winter, I found a couple beds under this one cedar, because it was a south facing slope, but dude, I put that camera up and I got hammer after hammer on this little ridge. Yep. So do not overlook little pieces of property or little pieces of ground that don't have sign on them, because that it doesn't really mean anything, to be honest with you.
Well, I think we could tie that back into hunting the small pieces of property. I mean, you're saying it right there, because a lot of times these small pieces that I've hunted before, they don't have the sign and show the sign, but it doesn't mean it's not going to hunt better than that. The couple of things that I wanted to add to what you were saying, you know, about taking these trips and everything, obviously, yes, slow down. And these shed hunt trips that I call them, it's ends up being a nature hike is what it is. And I'm using my woodsmanship while I'm there. And I actually go the other way. Like I've got enough sheds. Like I don't have to find sheds. I want to make a purpose with this. You know, if we have 8 solid hours that we're going to hike, I want to know that I used 8 hours for my next future hunt there. The other thing I would think about too is understanding like where you can camp at and understanding if there are knowing if there's a town or hotel motel type situation nearby, because those do become factors, especially when the weather starts to turn on you. I realized the very first year I was there in Iowa that their camping regulations on public ground are different than say like Nebraska.
How so?
So what I understand, and I didn't end up camping in Iowa, just to preface that first. So when we went to Nebraska, you can actually set your tent up or whatever on the parking lot. Mm-hmm. According to Iowa, the way I read it and the way the gentleman explained it to me from the DNR was you cannot set your tent up on a parking spot. You have to have it 100 yards away from the parking spot. So I thought that was kind of odd, but you know, you obviously have to be on public property, but it has to be 100 yards away from it. So you actually have to hike in, set your camp up there.
Yeah, I honestly don't even know if you're allowed to camp on public ground in Iowa. Yeah, unless it's an official campground.
Yep. See, so that's kind of where it was gray. So then I literally was kind of bummed because that first year I went out there, I'm like, where am I going to camp at? You know, so I actually just went to the nearest town and got a motel for the week that I was there.
Yeah. And a lot of times in Iowa, I know Iowa specifically, this is something that you will definitely need to check all the rules and regulations of where you camp and what you decide to do, whether you're going to rent a cabin on a state park or something like that. A lot of these places shut off water and electricity come the around the time where things start to freeze.
Yep.
Right. So if it tends to be so this year in Iowa, my dad pulled his camper down and I hunted down with my dad, or my dad was basically just there. And I hunted out of his camper for a handful of days. And so I ended up, what did I do? I was able to take showers, but that next day after I left was a hard axe and they shut everything down. They shut down electricity. They shut down all the water and things like that. And so it was open and awesome, until it was not open and awesome. And then you can camp there, but there's no electricity and there's no running water.
Right.
So
that's a great point too, because the few years that I've been out to Nebraska, you know, I always plan on tent camping, and I've literally seen that weather go from 80, 90 degrees down to about 30 the next day, you know, 70 mile an hour winds, snow, ice, you name it. So, I mean, I think planning accordingly with all that stuff, and at least having a backup plan with that stuff as well.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think this is a really good conversation that we've had today, you know, kind of just reiterating the fact that you got to know what to look for first, right? And we didn't really go into a ton of detail today about what specifically to look for. You know, obviously you're trying to find bedding. Obviously you're trying to find maybe even staging areas, places where there's a lot of old sign, because old sign, it means something to a point where this area at some point held deer. You have to find out why deer were there. Is it because there was a food source close by? Maybe it was a huge acorn crop close by. Is it a staging area to somewhere else? Transition areas between ridges, travel corridors, you know, big, long ridges where deer, you know, they'll travel on the downwind side, based off of whatever the wind direction is. And so, and of course, bedding, right? Thick cover, or, you know, areas where it doesn't necessarily have to be thick cover, but good cover for a couple of deers, beds, things like that. Keep your eyes open, slow down, observe, take notes, whether it's on a digital mapping app or maybe even keeping a little piece of paper with you, whatever you decide to do. I think that will play a big role in at least getting you a start when you do actually start the hunt. Because I don't know about you, but in the past, I have gone to scout some properties, and man, I showed up, I did my thing, I left, took my notes, I showed up, and it was completely different. Yeah. And if some of it had to do with the crop rotation, some of it had to do with hunting pressure, things like that, but it didn't play out, so I needed a backup plan.
Right.
And maybe even you need one or two backup plans, but it's good to know all of those things before you even step foot in the woods with your weapon.
Well, I think just to reiterate too, you know, you always hear guys that say that they don't have enough property to hunt, or, you know, they can't get permission on private or public sucks or whatever, so on and so forth. The one thing I could tell you, on the thousands of acres that I was in and around, I never saw another soul the entire time, Friday and Saturday. So, I mean, take it for what it's worth. If you're willing to put the time in, you know, hopefully it's rewarding.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we're done with this episode. Huge shout out to you, Jason, for taking time out of your day to do this. Huge shout out to everybody who is listening to the How to Hunt Deer podcast. If you are an advertiser and feel like you would want your brand to be represented on this podcast, reach out to us, and we would love to take your money. So, there's that. Good vibes, everybody. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next time.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me. Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances. Check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details.
Experian.
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.